Ready? Good morning and welcome to the July 1st, 2019 executive session meeting of the Chelan County Public Utility District Commission. Today we have three commissioners present, Commissioner Smith, Commissioner Congdon, and Commissioner Arsenault. We have two commissioners en route that will be here shortly. We have General Manager Steve Wright, General Counsel Eric Walquist, and Assistant Clerk of the Board Teresa Boucher. We have need for an executive session, which will last about 50 minutes, roughly. The purpose.
Yes, we were scheduled to go until 11.
Until 11, okay. So the executive session will last for 2 hours, the purpose of which is to discuss legal counsel agency enforcement action, litigation, potential litigation to which the district or its board is or is likely to become a party, and or legal risks as authorized by the RCW.
So I think, Commissioner, the purpose for the executive session this morning is not for legal. It's for assessing the performance of a public employee.
Thank you. Thank you very much. All right, so we will go into executive session.
Steve.
We'll wait until we've got everybody.
While I'm thinking of it, I drive by it and I keep forgetting to mention it.
That worked. Ready? We're coming out of executive session. It is July 1st, 2019. No decisions were made. No votes were taken. We will take a short 10-minute break. We will reconvene at 11:15 and start our study session. We are adjourned for until the study session begins. Good morning and welcome to the July 1st, 2019 meeting of the Chelan County Public Utility Commission. I'd like to thank everyone for coming today and remind you to please silence any electronic devices you may have brought with you. Today's meeting is both a study and a business session, the study session beginning now at 11:15 and the afternoon business session starting at 1 o'clock. We welcome the public input at our meetings and remind you that these meetings are recorded. If you wish to address any item on the agenda, we ask that you come to the microphone and please state your name, address for the record, and limit your comments, please, to 3 minutes. Today we have all five commissioners present, General Manager Steve Wright, General Counsel Eric Walquist, and along the Assistant Clerk of the Board, Teresa Boucher. So please, at this time, if you would join me in asking Anthony Holloway to lead in the Pledge of Allegiance and a safety minute.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
How are you guys doing this morning?
Good. Good.
So my name is Anthony Holloway. I work here at the district in the drafting department. I know a few of you guys already, so those of you who don't, my name is Anthony Holloway. I was here to say a safety minute. Safety tip. So I'm going to do barbecue safety. Since it's barbecue season, so basically a few couple tips. For gas grills, follow the manufacturer's instructions for lighting the barbecue. Inspect the cylinder for propane tank for bulges, dents, gouges, corrosion leaks, or evidence of extreme rusting. Also examine the hoses on your grill for brittleness, leaks, holes, cracks, or sharp bends. If you find any of these problems, it's time to replace the equipment. Be sure to keep propane tanks upright and move gas hoses away from dripping grease and hot surfaces. Never bring a propane tank indoors and never store spare gas containers under or near your grill. Keep your barbecue covered when it's not in use. These are the safety tips for charcoal grills. Charcoal grills tend to flare up, so keep the fire extinguisher handy. You know the fire extinguisher thing. Use charcoal lighter fluid to light new coals only. Don't use on coals that are already lit. And a couple other tips for both grills. You should never burn your gas or charcoal inside your home, tent, vehicle, or other enclosed areas. Never leave a barbecue unattended. don't wear loose clothing, especially long sleeves, while grilling. Trim the fat from the meat before grilling to avoid drips, which cause flare-ups and charring. Thank you very much. You guys have a great day.
Anthony, before you head off, I have to share with you an experience. This is very timely. This happened many, many years ago. We had a Weber, one of those kettle grills, where the top came off, and it was early generation, so it was propane. And I was at work on my way home, and wife said, well, why don't I start the barbecue? We'll kind of get dinner ready. And she had never started the barbecue before. So I walked her through the process, and I failed to remind her of one thing, and that was to take the lid off before you turned on the gas. And after several times of hitting the igniter and it not lighting, eventually it lit. And that lid on that barbecue was never the same again. It must have went about 50 feet straight up in the sky and landed in the neighbor's yard. So one of the things to remind those with barbecues is to always open the lid first.
Well, I've blown my eyebrows off a few times. Thank you, guys. Have a great day.
Yeah. Thanks, Anthony.
Our friend the squirrels, one of the reasons for shutting your propane cylinder off after you finish is that sometimes you will get dripping on your line. So this guy, not disciplined, leaves his valve open and lets his barbecue cool down. It's late in the afternoon. He rolls it back into his garage. Well, a squirrel was living in the garage, loved the smell of the meat on the hose. So it chewed through the hose, which created the gas leak, and that was all fine until his gas water heater went on. So his garage went about 50 feet in the air. Yeah, another good reason if you have squirrels in your neighborhood.
Stay safe, you guys, and have your guys a nice summer.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, before you go on, I'd like to share with the people present that at the beginning of our executive session, I shared two goals today. One is to stay alert and awake, and the other one is to remain vertical through the whole thing. So I just want to say that how much I appreciate everybody's thoughts, cares, and concerns about 2 weeks ago, and it means a lot. And it's all just part of the healing process, and we learn things every time. But thank you very much for everything that everybody did and the follow-up. It's much appreciated.
Thank you, Commissioner Bolt. Appreciate that. So, Commissioners, we have approval of the agenda. We've been presented an agenda, and items on the consent agenda are subject transfer to the regular agenda upon request of any commission member. Do I hear any such requests?
I'd like to suggest that we move agenda item number 11 to the consent agenda as recommended by management.
Is there a second?
Second.
Been moved and seconded. Any discussion? Hearing no discussion, all those in favor, say aye.
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 Those opposed? The ayes have it. Okay, Steve, would you care to take over here?
I would like to, first of all, we're going to work with CPO winner recognition. So I want to invite Wenbo and Mike to come on up, please. So they were not able to be with us last board meeting. I'm very proud of them. We actually, this month, had to have a seat right up front, please. So very proud of them. This last month, we actually had two groups of winners. They were so good, and we just felt like they were so important that it was worthwhile bringing two forward. I'm going to read to you from the recommendation that was given to us. Wenbo and Mike, working on Unit C8 at Rocky Reach, experienced a shear pin failure and twisted wicket gate stem on or before April 26th. Wenbo and Mike gathered and reviewed relevant data, conducted material strength analyses, and provided concise recommendations for restoring unit operation. All pertinent information was captured in a nicely formatted memo that was timely and easy to understand. And their colleagues commended Wenbo and Mike for their work on this. So we wanted to say thank you to them. It's obviously a very important project to us, produced a lot of value for the district and for our customer owners, and they've made a big contribution. So thank you for that. At this moment, we always give you a chance, if you'd like, to say something to the board.
Sure. Thank you for this opportunity. I appreciate this board. And we of course, you know, work for a paycheck, which is always nice, but it's nice to also be recognized by the management commissioners for work that we do. So that's very nice. Thank you. And we also appreciate opportunities to come our way to use some engineering that we don't normally use, and so that was an opportunity we had, and fortunately it worked out in our favor instead of having to replace the wiki gate or take the unit down and repair it, which would take weeks or months. We were able to come up with a way to salvage it, basically by looking at the material properties and taking some hardness tests and doing the evaluation based on known material properties, curves, and that kind of thing, and fortunately was able to determine that material strength wasn't compromised. It's still in the safety range, and we can reuse it. We had to do some modifications to the attachments, the wiki gate levers and links, to get it back because the stem and heck had actually twisted. But the mechanics helped out there and plugged the original hole and line bored a new hole for the connection and put it back in service, so it worked out really nice. And, anyway, that's a short summary of what happened there. And instead of weeks and weeks or months of downtime, was able to get it back in service in a few days. So, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And Bill, would you like to offer anything?
Yes, it's such an honor to receive this award. And I think Rock Ridge is a great team. And also work with the engineering team and the CM work together. And the CM did really excellent repair work on the shear levers. And by then, they work quickly with us into the test and make sure every step goes smoothly and the test and we get squeeze, the opening, all smooth, operate excellent. So by that, and we receive pretty good result and make sure unit can reoperate. So that's really opportunity work with the team and feel honor work with the team together.
Thank you.
Great, thank you. That's wonderful. We have so much work going on at the district, and anything we can do to be more efficient and not, as you mentioned, be several months out to replace a wicket gate is tremendously helpful. So thank you.
And I just have to tell you, I saw the picture of this when it was broken, and the first time I saw it, Kirk brought it in, I thought, oh, gosh, that does not look good. That looks like months, for sure. And just kind of amazed that they could come up with a solution that allowed it to get back in service. So I really appreciate it. We do have certificates and coins for you, so I'd like to have those.
Thank you both.
Thank you.
Okay, we're ready for our next agenda item. This is the quarterly electric load growth update. Andy Wendell and Chad Rissman will be presenting for us today.
Good morning, commissioners.
Morning.
Good to see you.
Good morning. Chad Rissman, Director of Distribution, Asset Management, and Engineering, and Andy Wendell, Director of Customer Service. In the interest of time, we're going to try to hit some of the highlights of this, so probably go fairly quickly, hit the highlights, and if there's anything that you want to stop and ask questions on, let me know. Wanted to hit on a few things, just an update of where we're at on our load forecast as we sit right now. I wanted to mention that there's a cross-departmental team that operates through finance and other areas of the district that are monitoring our load growth and running load growth models and coming up with forecasts and predictions. So a little bit of information from them, overview of active projects, some Q3 action items that we're working on, and then have a little opportunity for questions. Andy's got a picture here of Riverside Drive Apartments, one of the latest additions, just an example of some of the what we like to call organic growth, more of our residential, commercial. I believe there's about just under 170 meters, new meters here, so 170 approximately apartments in the area. But there's similar projects like this, not quite this big, but that are going on around the district, so those are being connected. We have this table, the 10-year load forecast, and I just want to take a second on this. The base case there, 48 average megawatts, so it's about 4.8 megawatts per year if you look at a 10-year period. We wanted to have a 10-year look here because there is quite a bit of up and down and seasonality to things. So that's about a 2% increase in our load growth, which is good since we have a lot of conservation efforts that are happening. So that masks a lot of the growth that's going on. It's a good thing, but there's a lot more growth than less growth in energy than there actually is in new meters, so we'll get to that just a little bit. I wanted to point out that the high case still exists here. That's cryptocurrency and HD loads. We're not anticipating that we're going to see anything like that in the next 10 years, at least what we're seeing most recently, but new rates and policies have managed that growth rate down to closer to what the base is, and then we have the low case, which doesn't seem very possible at this point because growth is pretty strong. Of that 48 average megawatts, I wanted to point out a significant part of that is the Diamond Foundry. It'll be coming online, so approximately half of that, or just under half of that, is going to be the Diamond Foundry load. It's an interesting graph that our load forecasting group keeps. This is a rolling 12, but I'll draw your attention to the blue line. The blue line, this goes back to January of 2014, so it's a rolling 12 of new meters, net new meters, that have been installed. And the blue line is the residential meters. So total meters is the blue line plus the commercial, sort of organic. To give you an idea, we're somewhere around 700 new meters back in 2006, 2007, which we saw our largest growth. The load forecasting team thinks that in 2019, this year, that we're going to hit an all-time peak of 1,000 new meters.
Wow!
So we're on track to do that. This was stat was updated May, so we know that those apartments have come online, 167. Andy will identify a few others, so probably going to hit an all-time new meter install peak.
Are they geographically spread throughout the county?
Yes.
No true hot spots?
Well, there's certainly some hot spots, Chelan North and South Shore being one hot spot. But Wenatchee also repurposing of property within the city limits. We'll also talk a little bit about the city's comprehensive plan that's looking to expand the residential units as well.
Sorry. So this is a slide that we've been trying to maintain. Some additional loans, a little bit of confusion. I thought Andy was going to handle this slide, so excuse me. We've started out. We maintain a list of rumored new connections and then also connections that are going through our application process and try to match that up with what our peaks are. It's difficult to do because this is the granular level based on what the high level of the 48 average megawatts that we're looking over a 10-year period, but it is an indicator of how good our estimate, a load forecast, 10-year load estimate is. So we're monitoring what's coming online and not coming online. Just wanted to point out some of the few, the green star there started out things that we've seen connect up. We've got a note on there, the Diamond Foundry is, they're pushing up to a half a megawatt and ramping up, so they're probably going to hit their goals before too long. So,
I would just add one thing on this slide too. Is one indicator that we're looking at is the churn rate from the time we get an application to the time we're actually energizing a service. And what I can say is that we're seeing a trend where that time frame is shortened up. So there's a lot of construction going on from the time the property is purchased, and the development is happening relatively quickly in comparison to historical numbers there.
So on that list you had there, you only had the last one that had no application. Does that make fair to make the inference that all the rest of those you've already received the application?
Yeah, in some way, shape, or form, we've received some application or some notification through the planning process where they've applied for the permitting on that. We know that on the last one, Localtel has expressed intentions to occupy portions of the new city hall. We just haven't seen that transition into a formal application.
Okay, well, aside from the numbers, that the one that leaps out is the new apartment in Sunny Slope. That does leap out.
Yeah. Okay, so on that, one of the things that we're doing in addition to load forecasting is, of course, reaching out to the municipalities and the county in terms of comprehensive planning. And most all of the municipalities are actively updating their comp plans. Most recently, we had an opportunity to sit down with the City of Wenatchee Planning and Economic Development Group and take a look at what their plans are. And this area is the rough boundary of what they're calling the western foothills of Wenatchee, where they're anticipating doing several road connections in those foothills to improve the ability to develop some of the remaining properties within that area. The estimated numbers for new residential units is 1,200 in this particular area. And that's a combination of both single-family homes as well as multifamily residential sector. So that's a relatively large number for that particular area. Just a point, too, you can see that in that particular area, we've got really two substations that are active, the College substation up at 5th and Western Avenue, as well as the Western Street substation towards the north end just below Broadview. You can see the percent loadings of those substations are relatively high. So we do have property that was purchased several years ago, good foresight to grab that Castle Rock Street property. So it's likely that that substation will likely come into our planning arena in the next 3 to 5 years to help relieve pressure from those other substations. I was talking with Chad earlier this morning, and we do anticipate a lot of other things that we can do prior to Castle Rock within the system to try to accommodate that new development in that western slopes. But we'll definitely see some more activity. This is just an example, and we're working with the other municipalities to understand similar growth areas in terms of City of Chelan, Leavenworth, Cashmere, and Eniat as well. This slide is one that you've seen a lot. It's just a culmination of kind of where we're seeing the growth. To your question earlier, Commissioner Smith, it is spread out across the county, both in terms of commercial and residential growth. Chelan continues to be a hot spot for us. There's a lot of new multifamily housing, as well as some commercial development in the recreation activities in the Chelan area. And then Wenatchee, of course, as we know, has quite a bit going on as well. So we're keeping a close eye on that. Q1 and Q2 this year, we've already seen approximately 3 megawatts of actual loads come online. That's a combination of some of the contracted cryptocurrencies as well as a big handful of the residential units coming online as well. So some of the action items for Q3. We know that earlier this year we lifted the moratorium on the cryptocurrency and HDL loads. The good news is that we're being able to keep our head above water as far as reviewing and receiving inquiries on that. To date, we've got no formal applications for cryptocurrencies or HDLs, but we are having conversations. But we're keeping our head above water there, so we're happy to report on that. Substations, we are continuing to look at the opportunities to purchase properties where it makes sense, where it fits in with our long-range planning. We've scratched a lot of them off our list, but we've got another handful to go, so we're continuing to work on that. And then our customer lists are growing. As you can see, those are big lists, and every day it seems like we're getting more and more applications for a lot of residential, new commercial, agricultural applications. So that list is growing. But we're able to keep pace with that, particularly since we're seeing a little bit lower activity in the cryptocurrency and HDL side of things. So focusing on organic growth. And, of course, that all that growth translates into how does that fit in with our system modeling and how is our distribution mm-hmm. system operating and the assets that we have. So our engineers are on track with that as well. And then throughout the remaining part of the summer, we'll be very active in working with the municipalities in the county on that long-range planning and growth. So there's a few upcoming meetings in July and August on that, and we'll be reporting back to you similar findings or similar developments such as the Western Foothills development. And one thing that we haven't talked about that we'll probably be talking a little bit more about internally and possibly with the board is not only is there growth in Chelan and Leavenworth and Wenatchee, but we're also seeing growth in that little community up there in Stehekin. And that's translating into some pretty big challenges for us in terms of generation capabilities. So we're really looking at that right now. We're having conversations with the community. We're looking at energy conservation opportunities. But the fact of the matter is there's growth happening in that area. And we have limited or finite resources in that particular area. So we're going to be coming back, talking with management and potentially introducing some solutions in that particular area.
Andrew, when you say growth, are you talking about new meters or just greater demand?
Yeah, we're seeing new meters as well as upgrades of existing services. So I think it's just fair to say with the economy doing well, people are looking for that remote area and hoping to have the same service levels that they have anywhere else. And that's just a big challenge for us. So yes, it's both new and upgrading of existing meters. So we are looking at that. We're working internally, both generation and distribution and customer service are collaboratively working on those issues. And you'll be hearing a little bit more about that as time comes.
Thanks.
You have let them know that at Pensacon that we probably won't be able to deliver fiber.
Actually, one of the modified services up there is a communication company, so they're looking probably to expand some of their capabilities on that particular service. But needless to say, I'm sure the customers would love to have Flint Beauty Fiber in that particular area. But
all I can say is my oldest grandkids survived 5 days at Stehekin without their phones.
Without their phones.
So it is possible.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, as soon as we got halfway down lake.
You're right. Right. So in summary, we can say that the growth is continuing to increase on our electric system, both in terms of energy as well as peak. We're forecasting to exceed our historical peak for new meters set at 1,000 new meters. And it looks like that trend might continue based on the development of the properties and the timing of residential subdivisions. It looks like we are in for a 2 to 3 year increase in new residential services as well as commercial. Mm-hmm. Again, the focus from the municipalities tends to be on relieving the housing pressure, and their comprehensive plans are representing that. And so our planning needs to also represent that. We're working on that closely. So we know the Diamond Foundry is coming online. It's a small load at this point in time, but we anticipate it coming up pretty quickly. And we are continuing to look at that large infrastructure siting, substations, feeders, transmission lines to supply those substations power. So a lot of efforts going on there. And then I mentioned Stehekin, so we'll be back talking more. So any questions we can answer for you?
Pretty exciting time throughout the county.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes the day go by really fast.
I'll bet. Yeah. Thanks, guys.
Okay.
You gentlemen.
Okay, next up, we want to do something that actually we haven't done before. We want to give you a sneak preview of the thinking that's going on around five-year business plans. We're in the midst of strategic planning, and strategic planning, we're really focused on the questions that we thought were of most interest to our customer owners and really focused on those, but there's a whole bunch of things that are going on at the PUD and will need to go on over the course of the next 5 years. And they also have to reflect some changes that the board has suggested to mission and vision. As with any strategic plan, you start with your financial foundation, and our financial foundation is very good right now, so it gives us the opportunity to talk about some opportunities to be able to do some things. So what I really am intending to do today is just give you some insight into the conversations that the senior team has been having over the next few months as we develop the five-year business plans. The five-year business plans will come forward as they traditionally do in September. Be an opportunity for you to get into those in detail. But because this is a really significant moment in time, I wanted to give you a sense of what our thinking is. And if you have any thoughts, we welcome them. So first off, we start from the mission statement. And recall that the board did, in the board workshop last year, update the mission statement. We made that clear as part of the context document we put out in strategic planning. We have not received any comments about that, about changing to starting with enhancing the quality of life in Chelan County. And so we are assuming at this point that that change is now in place and will be reflected in the final strategic plan, and we're using it as part of our decisions around the five-year business plans. The board also updated the vision statement and focused it on the what's up on the wall there, the comment that we've been using so directly to focus on best value for the most people for the longest period of time. But the board also asked us to initiate that statement with something along the lines of, in a rapidly changing utility environment, we will provide. So recognizing that there's a lot going on in our industry and that we are going to have to continue to change. And that, of course, also is reflected in the board's focus on innovation that you'll see more of in just a moment. We had seven components of our vision coming out of the last strategic plan. The first four have not changed. They're the same as they were before. The board asked us to focus on resilience, and we added resilience into the general category of continuously improving efficient, effective, compliant, risk-assessed, and now resilient operations. And I'll speak more about that in a moment. That does have pretty significant implications for our thinking. We had previously a part of our vision that focused on enhancing the capabilities of Chelan PUD staff. We've tried to broaden that out to focus on the board had encouraged us to think about the Human Performance Improvement Initiative and how we would use that. So we've broadened that particular statement that describes the vision. And we've added one about encouraging innovation. So we're very specific about that. Although the way we think about this, just to be clear, and I'll come back to this more in a moment, is that we do think about it in terms of innovation in a risk-assessed world. So it's not just innovation for innovation's sake. So we also have given a lot of thought to where we are, given that our financial circumstances are good, what's the current status of our business? And we have this goal that we really want to be a great utility, and a great utility is first quartile in lots of things. So just thinking about where we are, and some of this is actual data that we have, some of it is anecdotal data. We would say we are in first quartile, certainly with respect to customer satisfaction. Not sure how you could do much better than the customer satisfaction scores that we have. Our financials, we clearly are in the top tier of financials for consumer-owned utilities. Our fiber program is outstanding in terms of the ubiquity of service, quality of service that's available. And we've been tested through the audit process on our compliance with reliability standards. So we feel like we're in really good shape on all of those. Next up, we have things that we think are more in second quartile. The capability of our hydro system. Capability is defined as the amount of megawatts that are online at any given point in time. We're in the low 70s or even high 60s, and we think we need to move that up to be in first quartile. Our retail reliability scores, when we look at them in terms of duration and frequency of outages, tend to be more in the second quartile. And our safety numbers, we think, are more in the second quartile. We also have an area that we're pretty focused on right now, which is customer service technology, the forward-facing, externally-facing look that we have to our customers and the technology that we make available to them. The availability of smart meters is pretty prevalent today. Over half the meters in the country are now AMI meters. So we are thinking that we're probably more in third quartile in terms of customer service technology. And our goal is that we will move a number of these up, that we would move hydro capability, retail reliability, and safety from second quartile into first quartile. That's what we're striving for across this next 5-year period. and that we would move this information and operations technology that's currently in third quartile more towards second quartile. So,
can I interrupt you just for a minute?
Mm-hmm.
I was going to bring this up under commissioner information, but that maybe this is the appropriate time. I just wanted to share that, interestingly enough, as you're talking about third quarter on customer service technology, that's the one area, surprisingly, for about the last 6 months, I've been getting feedback up in my area from I have an interesting road. People walk up and down the road, and I'm at the end of the road right before you get to the river. So Leavenworth people come to this road because they like the beach. People from outside the area who are visiting family come in, and it's just been amazing to me the amount of people, particularly younger customer owners, who are saying, you know, I'm talking to my sister-in-law who lives over there, and they have this app that allows them to manage their electrical, look at how they're using their electricity in their house. You know, when we start visiting, and, you know, when are we going to get this? And I bet on an average I speak to 20 people a month who are asking, when Chelan County moving forward with this? We want this. Now, when those same people then compare electrical rates, there's no doubt, and you know, then that person can kind of puff their shoulders up and say, well, but our rates are lower than yours. But the bottom line for me is that we still have customer owners who are now expecting more in being able to have better information. I just wanted to share that with my fellow commissioners.
Bill, I appreciate hearing that. That is really fundamentally what this is about. This information operations technology, customer-facing technology, is a lot more than smart meters. And in fact, one of the things that we're trying to do is describe what the pathway will be. That it's not just you put a smart meter in and then all of a sudden you have an app on your phone.
Right.
There's a lot of work that has to happen in order to make that translation to the services that a customer can get when that additional information becomes available. And one of the keys to that is developing technology roadmaps so that we can actually begin to see. So not only do we need to do smart meters, but we have a whole bunch of software development that has to come in order to be able to make that app available on your phone. That's going to be one of our goals for this five-year plan, is to develop technology roadmaps so that you can begin to test and see what the priorities are for the organization about where we want to go with technology and what types of services could become available and what priorities there should be, because we will not be able to do it all at once. That much we're absolutely clear on. So I really appreciate that comment. It fits quite well with what our thinking is right now. We've taken a little bit of time to think about innovation and resilience, because they're the two particular areas that the board called out in the board workshop. And this is our thinking about how we're proceeding with it. Facilitating a culture that is open to change is important. We believe we're moving the pendulum tens of degrees, not 180 degrees. I think that's really important. We are not going to be a startup technology company. We are not going to be one that has a 10% chance of success. That's just not the business that we're in. It's not our comfort zone. But what we are trying to do is be more open to the idea of new technologies. I mentioned before, technology roadmaps are going to be a key for us to think through how technology can be used and what the sequencing is of adding technology into our system so that we'll be able to provide best value for our customers. We are going to be focused on the idea that everything that we are pursuing has to add customer value. So it's risk-assessed innovation. What's the likelihood of success that if we take on something? And that not every idea that comes forward will get approved. That you know, we're going to have some things that either we don't think create value, or the risk is too high, or that it's not a high enough priority for us right now. We've heard a lot from our employees that if we want more innovation, that we as management and the board just need to understand that how they react to when things don't go well has an impact on how willing people are to bring forward new ideas. And so it's important to celebrate the successful new ideas. And when we bring forward the red goals, the things that don't go well, that it's not not people get beat up for that. It's a questioning attitude about what do we learn from it, which, of course, is the core of our human performance initiative anyway, the path that we're going down. We're going to struggle with managing within planned workload. The technology roadmaps are very interesting. There's lots of things we could be doing, especially when you're trying to move from third quartile. There's lots of examples of things that other utilities are doing. And we're going to have to figure out how we sequence that in a fashion that we're actually managing it with the staff that we've got. The core of all of this, we think, is more data, better data access, purpose-driven analytics. That those three things will lead to value for our customer owners. I want to take you through a similar thought process with respect to resilience. Resilience is an interesting word, really, when you think about it. Resilience is being able to recover when things go bad. And they're really putting yourself in the position where you have more what you could think of as reserves. Typically, you might think of those as financial reserves. So if something goes wrong, do you have enough money? You know, if the roof fails, do you have enough money to replace the roof? It's bigger than that. It's if something goes wrong, do you have enough people to be able to respond? You know, if you have a significant outage of some kind, do you have enough people to be able to make it work? So there is a cost component to this. I want to make sure that I'm being clear with the board about this. When we talk about resilience, there's a, whether it's a people or money, there is a cost component of building more resilience into the system. Again, an appropriate time for us to talk about this, given the financial health of the organization. But you should anticipate, as we come forward with the five-year business plans, that there are cost and resource implications. We are trying to tie this to risk management. What's the probability of an event times the consequence of an event? That gives you some priorities with respect to resilience. And we're trying to tie it to our highest priorities, coming back to the things that we just talked about, the areas where we're trying to move from second quartile to first or from third to second. You know, those are the areas that we try to create priority focus on. Okay, now I want to try to walk you through the tentative five-year goals. These are things that, as we've thought about them, these key issues that we're going to want to address in the next 5 years, given that setup around mission, vision, values, and our focus on adding innovation and resilience. First of all, I want to make sure our customer owner satisfaction exceeds 90%. We want rates that are resilient to wholesale market downturns and changing retail customer demographics. So this is what you can see coming out of our strategic plan, that focus on that we need to make some changes in our rates. But while we're making those changes, we want to strive to have no overall electric rate increase above basically rate of inflation, around the 3% level for each of the next 5 years. Want to move the water, wastewater, and fiber businesses to a path towards independent financial sustainability. You're going to hear more about the customer survey results today. Our customers have endorsed going down that path generally. And we're very proud of the fact that we are among the top financially related public power utilities in the country. Two more have joined us in this category now, so it's no longer five. There's seven public power utilities that are in this category. So that's why you see it as among the top as opposed to naming the number that we're showing. Moving to first quartile. So hydro system capability at 89% is our goal. And there's a lot of work there at Rocky Reach, at Powerhouse 1, and completing the work on the Powerhouse 2 modernization that will be initiated within this five-year period. We really want the HRI to be the premier source nationally for hydropower big data, and we are increasingly thinking that that is a realistic goal, that we have a shot at that, at the path that we're on. We have spent a lot of time talking about how do we get to best for the most for the longest, and one of those keys has been getting longer-term warranties from vendors. And we've had enough conversation with those vendors, and we're into that conversation now on Powerhouse 2, as we're down to three companies that have met our request for qualifications, and we're in the design-build discussion about options that we think it's a realistic goal that we get 10-plus year warranties, which where the industry standard has been more like three up until now. And In the hydropower arena, we also are going to seek to achieve tax treatment parity with solar and wind, and we mean that at both the state and the federal level. Next up. Go back one. There we go. Now focusing on distribution. So we want to move the distribution system in a top quartile for reliability. That's both SAIDI, which is duration of outages, and SAIFI, which is frequency of outages, as well as average minutes of customer outage. That last one in particular is going to be a real challenge for us. Rural area with long distances up river corridors is a bit of a challenge in terms of trying to get to people quickly. Easier to serve dense urban areas than it is to serve ours, but we think that setting a goal in that area will allow us to focus on what are the things that it would take to be able to achieve it and be able to bring those options to you. We have some big challenges on our system with compliance with National Electric Safety Code. We are working on and need to come up with an implementation plan. There will be cost consequences associated with that. When we add it up and we look at the growth that you just heard about, we think we are going to need 7 new substations completed within the next 5 years. More than one per year. So you've heard about all of these, but the actual translation of a plan to getting it completed on the ground is going to take a substantial amount of effort. We hope to have our new customer information system in place by next year, and then that we have smart meters completed, and that we've got a plan for maintaining them within this five-year period as well. We know this emerging risk of what we call small wire failure. You've heard it sometimes as copper wire failure, where we actually have wire on the ground and creates a public health and safety risk, and we want to make sure that we've eliminated that. We think we've got 130 miles of it up in the air right now, so it's a substantial effort to get that done. And then a lot of fire prevention activities, and I'll be talking more about fire prevention in a few minutes. I want to move safety into top quartile. We don't have good benchmark data right now, and so we're working on getting good benchmark data. Hope to have that completed as part of, as we go through the five-year business planning process. We also, in addition to the lagging indicators, we want to have leading indicators for safety that will go into this five-year business planning process. And we're making it a goal that safety is an acknowledged component of every employee's job. Closely related to the safety issues are investing in people issues. We think about what it is that makes people want to work here. And that first bullet is around that, that they have meaningful work, that they are producing industry-leading services, and that we have performance management that starts with being development-focused on the employees, that leads to measurable success in recruitment and retention. So it's the what's the bargain that people have when they come to work here? What is it that makes them want to work here? Meaningful work, industry-leading services, and the opportunity to develop their talents. In order to be able to get there, one of the key things that we want to accomplish is a full range of job-specific development opportunities that's available for each job. So whether it's an executive-level job, a leadership job here, supervisory, or a subject matter expert, that there is a clearly defined set of training that is associated with that that tells people both in the job the types of opportunities they have to improve their skills, but also for people who might want to apply for a job. These are the kinds of things that you need to be good at in order to be successful at this job. We want human performance improvement to be fully embedded in our culture. We're trying to figure out how to measure that. And we want greater diversity in our workplace and a workforce that increasingly reflects our community. In the marketing arena, we have a contract, a very big contract, 25% of our power supply that expires in 2027. And our thinking right now is we want strategies that are implemented for replacement for that contract by the end of this five-year planning period, by 2024. It's such a big part of our revenue stream that it's important to have that be in place in advance of the initiation of the service itself. We're looking to create an option for new large loads that would be served from carbon-free resources outside of the district's portfolio. So something like solar, wind, other type of product that could be offered that would allow us to provide service to a new large customer without increasing cost or risk for our existing customer owners. The Canadian entitlement allocation does expire, like it or not, in September of 2024. And the federal government has really been focused on the big picture conversation with Canada around the future of the Columbia River Treaty, which expires, or doesn't expire actually, but there was the option to be able to address it in September of 2024. Our contract does expire, and so there has to be a replacement for it, and that there is no choice. Something has to be done on that between now and 2024. Similarly, there was an agreement called the Pacific Northwest Coordination Agreement. That's how the hydro system operators on the U.S. side of the border will coordinate hydro system operations. That also is due to expire at the same time. It's in 2024. It has to be renegotiated. There are things like headwater benefits, which is if you're downstream of a project, you have payments that you have to make for upstream reservoir operators. Those have to be paid. There are headwater benefits. They have to be paid. The methodology has to be determined. There's a unique methodology for the Northwest that is embedded in the Pacific Northwest Coordination Agreement. So that also will have to be renegotiated. We know that as coordination expires in the river, we have to put independent operations for all of our hydro system operations in place. We have that going into effect next year on our system. And we want to be a recognized expert in hydropower evaluation, whether it's with respect to the impact of markets, legislation, or regulation. In the transmission arena, we need to have open access transmission policies and rates implemented to be consistent with the federal policy adopted by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Although as a non-jurisdictional utility, a public utility, we don't have to comply in the same way as an investor-owned utility, there are still obligations under the law for consumer-owned utilities. There is a Pacific Northwest Regional Transmission Planning Entity. It's in the middle of a very significant evolution, and that will change, and we have to be a part of that because we have transmission. There is a major new transmission project that Bonneville, Chelan, Douglas will be working on that needs to be completed within this five-year time frame. And we have some big fire hardening projects, including the one you're most familiar with, the one in Chelan, and the one we talked about at the last board meeting, the Plain Lake Wenatchee transmission project that we need to be moving forward for fire hardening purposes. In the environment, we have to confirm compliance and complete the survival study for the 2021 HCP check-in, which is the on-the-river part, and then we have a bigger overall no-net impact check-in that's due by 2023. We are working on this NPDES permit from the Chelan River that reflects the fact that we can't meet the temperature goals there, and we have to establish a precedent for how you meet an NPDES permit when you don't have the ability to control the temperature. We have oil and temperature issues that we know are coming. We've committed through a settlement agreement to address the oil NPDES, and then certainly our customers have spoken that they would like us to pursue early actions for the Rock Island relicensing. So those have to be completed probably by 2023 because the way early action works, before you're in the midst of the licensing process, you'd want to have your early action your early actions identified and submitted to FERC. All right, technology. This really focuses on these business and intelligence roadmaps. These are just a few of the ones that we are working on. We are working on technology roadmaps for hydro-digital transformation, for AMI, and all the things that follow on with AMI, like outage management systems. For overall information technology, that's the platform that supports everything else. For advanced distribution management systems, which is the ability, for example, to understand what's going on inside substations, to be able to predict outages before they happen or be able to respond more quickly to them. To overall business intelligence and data analytics, which is, so if you've got all of this data, for example, from AMI, where's your system to be able to understand that and turn it into a dashboard? And mobile applications, so that our employees in the field are able to do work without having to travel back and forth, be able to share information. We've got 5-year goals on for our small business units. The broadband gets 85%. We actually debated this last part quite a bit with a plan to reach nearly all, because we're not sure how we'd get to Stehekin, nearly all of our customers subject to economic feasibility, that we find a way to actually make it cost effective, and with a take rate exceeding 50%. This system really needs a second source for water. We've drilled dry holes a couple of times now. We're still working on finding the wet water. We want to understand and effectively manage all of our known compliance risks. So we've been working for a while on creating this software-based system to track compliance risk and make sure that we know where they are and we can manage them. And we want to successfully implement and use alternative contracting mechanisms. Rocky Reach Discovery Center. So we currently have about 50,000 visitors a year at the Rocky Reach Discovery Center. We're hoping with our upgrade, the Discovery Center will be able to increase that to 85,000 visitors. We currently train about 3,000 students on the value of hydropower. We want to increase that number. And a new area for us is we want to start training teachers. So it's the teach the teachers, so that we give them skills that they can use in the classroom. And we want to reach teachers all across the state, not just teachers in Chelan County. We need to complete our facilities projects that we're working on at Rocky Reach, Rock Island, and the Service Center. And we are really working hard to try to figure out how to improve the efficiencies in our internal contracting processes, because we feel like that's an opportunity for us to be able to get more done and get it done more quickly. Asset management. So we've committed to doing asset management. We now are focusing on active asset management plans for our most critical assets. And we're defining those as things that we have more than $10 million worth of risk, or that it creates a significant reliability risk for us. So it won't be all of our assets. We will not be able to have active asset management plans for all our assets. Trying to focus on the ones that are most important to us. Our fire risk strategy includes infrastructure hardening, vegetation management, our operational policies, and engagement with the land management agencies, which includes the response to the legislation that was recently enacted. And our cybersecurity policies are around continuously strengthening programs based on industry principles, analysis, and guidance. We are trying to get to an auditable standard for cybersecurity. That's our goal, is to get to a standard that we know whether we've done enough or not. We're over time at this point, so I want to pause for a second and say I probably have somewhere around 5-7 minutes left. It's up to you whether you want me to come back and do this after lunch or want me to finish now.
Now, Commissioners, you may have noticed that Gerald's is not open today. I don't know if commissioners have made other alternative plans for lunch.
No.
Should we push on for the next 7 minutes and try to conclude this section?
That would necessitate, if we have to go somewhere for lunch, coming back late.
Yes. Yeah, well, we're going to have to come back. It's already 10 after 12. We'll have to come back a little late.
I'd say finish later.
Finish later?
Are we going to reconvene at 1? We'll announce that.
It's really up to you. We have a relatively short afternoon agenda, so I'd say. And the executive session, that really is going to be how much time you want to spend.
Mm-hmm. So roughly how much time do you think this afternoon will take? Just a guess.
I would guess an hour or less.
Okay.
Why don't we come back at 10 after 1?
We'll come back at 10 after
so
1.
We have time.
Okay. All right.
Go out.
Okay, that's good. Yeah, thanks.
Okay, so we will recess for lunch and begin our business session at 1:10. Good afternoon, and welcome to the July 1st, 2019 business session of the Chelan County Public Utility District Commission meeting. I'd like to remind everyone to please silence any electronic devices you might have with you today. We welcome all of our visitors, and we place great value in public input at our meetings. Those wishing to address any item on the agenda, we ask that you please come to the microphone. Please state your name and address, and please, if you would, limit your comments to 3 minutes. We had a session this morning where we didn't quite complete our planning for strategic planning. So, Steve, I'm going to turn this back over to you.
Okay. We're at a break point there, and I think hopefully you've got the sense that what we're talking about for this next five-year plan is a pretty significant increase in workload, and it's a pretty aggressive plan. So the question that comes to mind then is, well, how would we manage an increase in workload like that? And there are quite a few tools available to us, and we intend to be employing all of them. First of all, streamlining processes. There was a specific item that was mentioned up there about thinking about how we do our contracting work in particular, which is a critical element of just about everything that was on the list. So we're very focused on that right now in terms of our opportunities to enhance our efficiency there. New technology adoption, it creates work and then it reduces work. And then sometimes it creates more work. So what you get is the opportunity to try to think through how do you put new technology in place. That's a workload impact. Then you get some efficiencies out of that. And there's also some new work. So, for example, if you're thinking about adage management system and using AMI, AMI creates a lot of data. You have the opportunity to be able to operate some parts of your business more efficiently, but then you also have to analyze the data. And that's a new function within the district, actually, is to take care of that data analysis. Workforce management. So we are trying to think through the whole question you heard earlier, that we've got a big focus on development of our employees. As we make these changes, particularly as we make technology changes, it's going to require different types of skill sets around here. That first question is, can we take the folks that we've got and enhance their skill sets in order to make them effective in their jobs? Didn't want to stay. Trying very hard to focus on being performance-driven, using performance tools to achieve goals. We continue to advance the use of a balanced scorecard approach, and we want to make sure that as we do that, that we're celebrating success. And when we get the yellow and red flags, that we're using those as warning signals to how to figure out how to allocate additional resources wherever that might be. We think human performance improvement and the focus on operational excellence will actually help us in terms of managing workload. It's the getting things right the first time, even if it takes you a little bit longer, moving at a pace where you make sure you've got good planning in place to make good decisions. We have talked some about agile and well-trained workforce, individual development plans for employees, full menu of development options. We think it's quite likely that we would be using more contractors and consultants, particularly as we go to places where it's not currently a core competency of the district. As you add technology, there are lots of utilities out there that have gone in front of us. We won't necessarily be the first to move on these, and that means there's an opportunity to learn from others, and consultants and contractors are a great way to be able to do that. Trying to focus more on greater delegation, but clarity around it's not just delegating for delegating's sake. It's use of our decision evaluation criteria, which is the how do you make a good decision at the PUD, and making sure that when delegation occurs, it's occurring consistent with the strategic direction and the performance plan. So it's delegation with sideboards, with their sideboards. That system just doesn't want to work. Oh, okay. Oh, great. Okay. I think
kidding used
that. Dead.
So hopefully you've got the sense that we're looking at a lot of different things. I said it earlier, I'm going to say it again. This is an aggressive work plan. It will almost certainly require more resources in order to accomplish. And this is a board choice, ultimately, whether we seek to accomplish this and allocate more resources to it, or whether we scale back some from it. We want to give you an aggressive plan and a set of options for you to think about. Again, we think we're in good financial health, have the opportunity to be able to make a choice like this, but ultimately it doesn't create value for our customer owners, and you're the best judge of that. So happy to take any feedback now. Again, wanted you to be thinking about this over the course of the next couple of months, so that when you see the business plans, you know, it's not hitting you for the first time and you're thinking, what the heck is that? Any thoughts?
Decision evaluation criteria. I have that at one time. I don't know. Oh, sorry. Decision evaluation criteria document. I had that at one time. I don't know what I did with it. Could you just, Teresa, maybe send that off to me again? Yeah. Thank you.
Just make sure, in case it's a question that others have too, because it has been a while since we've talked about it, it's the five key criteria for making a good decision at the district. So you don't think about it from a siloed perspective, because most anyone here who's delegated authority would be operating within a silo. So how do you think about it from the full district-wide perspective and make sure that things like workforce implications, business financial implications, political implications, environmental implications are all part of the consideration of making a good decision. But we will provide you some information about that too.
So, go ahead, Randy.
Well,
yes. Go
ahead. You know, I found this presentation maybe as interesting as any you've ever given us, because it is the list of goals you have. When I read it at home this weekend, I thought, wow, that's ambitious. But I look back over the 12 years that I've been here as a commissioner and where we started, where we are today, and looking forward where we need to go, recognizing we've got all of this capital program, we've got hydro relicensing, we've got so many things facing us in the future that just now seems like the last 10 years have been a preparation in getting us to the place where we're prepared to meet the future. And now we have to execute on that preparation for the future. So I understand the ambition, and I'm hoping that the senior management team is ready and up to the challenge of where we're heading, because I think this is important for our utility. What you've laid out, what you've proposed, I think it's very important. We're just at one of those moments in time as a utility that don't come along that often.
I want to go back to what Commissioner McKenna said earlier. You all commented, and we made it part of the vision statement, that we're in a rapidly evolving industry, and the problem is there are a lot of things changing around us. And we won't be able to be an island. We're going to have customers that are going to come here from other places, and they'll have expectations into the way we perform. And we have to be ready for that if we want to maintain high customer satisfaction scores.
Commissioner Bowles?
Yeah, I would just like to comment that we're in a really, as Commissioner Smith just said, we're in a legacy moment. Where we have the financial and human resources to move forward. And taking a look at the presentation this morning, you know, as well, moving all aspects of this organization to the top quartile is, I think, financially and human resource worthy of investment. And the bottom line is, the better we get at what we do, being adequately financed and having the human resources available, just simply brings value to our customers. And we have the resources, like I say, dollar-wise and human-wise, to be able to do it. It's good work. Right now we can afford to do it. In the long term, I think effects that it will have on the direction of this organization for future customers is certainly worth the investment. So I applaud what's here, what encourages us to move forward, and take good care of our employees as we reach out with this ambitious plan. And I think it's just important for our future, along with, you know, new facilities, other kinds of things. This just doesn't happen very often in the history of an organization. And we're uniquely positioned. And this commissioner says, amen, let's go.
Just yes, wanted Steve. To kind of reinforce what both...
Microphone.
Thank you. Randy and Dennis have said, and maybe just throw a little spin on the word resources. You know, at this unique opportunity to accomplish the vision that we've set forth, and to move the organization forward. What was the term you used to...
Are you kidding me? You think I'm going to remember what
once,
I said?
Once in a lifetime. I mean, it's a legacy. It's a unique opportunity to really move the organization forward. And I think as a commissioner, we can set a vision and challenge the organization to meet that vision. And I really appreciate the work of staff to create this 5-year plan. And what I'm going to be looking for is, you know, when you set a plan and you have high expectations and you think about that on the X and Y axis, high expectations, I also want to make sure that we're providing a high level of support that balances that so that that arrow doesn't go one way or the other. And oftentimes when there's such high expectations and you don't provide the support or the resources to go with that, it tends to burn staff out and wipe people out. We can do great things, but we just want to make sure that that support is there, and the commissioners need to hear when that, and I appreciate that, Steve, that, you know, we letting us know in advance so that we can provide those resources to get the work done and take advantage of this legacy moment that Dennis was talking about. So that's what I'm going to be looking for in the next 5-year plan is how we can support that ambitious, aggressive work that needs to be done and provide the support that keeps that balanced and move and the organization moving forward in a trajectory that's very healthy. I appreciate that presentation and the work that's gone into putting this together. It's very well done.
And when I talk about legacy, it's not the glitz part of legacy. It's the breadth and the depth of an organization. You know, that should be our legacy that carries on for the next 50 years, the well-being of the customers. The other legacy is pretty transitory.
All right, good. Thank you. I think we're ready to move on to the afternoon agenda then.
All right. And next on the agenda was the Diamond Foundry contract review.
I think we are going to...
Consent.
The consent agenda.
Oh,
first
okay.
Of all, sorry.
All right. Thank you. So I had too much pizza already. I'm going to sleep.
I'd move approval of the consent agenda with the addition of agenda item 11 that we moved there this morning.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed? The ayes have it.
Okay, next up we'll move to agenda item 9. That's a resolution accepting the proposal of Absher Construction Company of Puyallup, Washington to provide general contractor construction manager, GCCM, services for the service center project, and to authorize the general manager to enter into a contract for said services. We've got Dan Frazier and David Lodge here to present for us.
Good afternoon, commissioners. Dan Frazier, Director of Shared Services.
David Lodge, Project Manager.
We're here today for approval of a resolution for the next step in the process. And anytime we're doing something that's kind of out of the ordinary, we like to give a little background. So the district does a lot of work and enter into a lot of contracts. But this is a little bit different. It's the GCCM, or an alternative contract method. And so we just want to do a couple little background points about GCCM and why we're here. And we're awarding something that looks very small, but it's for a large project. And so it does feel a little out of the ordinary. So in general, GCCM is an alternative method. So it's not our typical design bid build. And it was created to mitigate risks and to maximize success of a project by creating a collaborative environment with your contractor and your design team, versus the let's open bids on bid day and really hope we get a successful bid. And why it's really good for this project is it was meant for large, complex projects like this one. And it's a very booming construction industry right now. And so having that collaboration is very important for us and a success for this project in particular. And you get to work on cost factors as you go instead of, again, waiting for bid day to address cost considerations that may drive a project into holding on and not doing a project and making poor bid decisions. There's also several other things we love about GCCM, and we'll be open to lots of questions, any questions you have about the process. But this is an interesting one because we actually execute a contract for a relatively moderate amount of $500,000, but it's moving toward a nearly $100 million project going forward, and we'll be back again, obviously, for that authorization. But this really starts the ball rolling with the contractor, so it's very important at this point that we have clear direction so that when we come back with the full amount and the guaranteed maximum project price, that everybody understands the direction we were moving in at this date. So with that, Dave is going to take us through the process that we used to select the contractor we're proposing today, and then a little bit about the resolution itself.
So the RFP process for this was a three-step process. We received qualifications, conduct interviews, and then a final cost proposal. So I want to take you through in a little bit more detail how we came to this recommendation. So the qualifications, we were fortunate to receive two qualifications from very qualified, experienced firms, and so it was a really good place to start out. We brought both of them in for interviews, and this is where Absher really stood out. So Absher is a family-owned company, started in 1940 in Puyallup, Washington. They've got 300 full-time staff, have done a number of similar projects, 10 maintenance and operation facilities, 24 GCCM projects, 29 transportation facilities. I could go on and on, but this isn't what set them apart. What set them apart was the team that we interviewed. When we sat down with the people, we could see that this was a team that we were going to be able to solve problems with. In their interview, they got to answer some questions that we had for them on how to select structural systems and how they would make some value-based decisions as we go through the design process. And they, the way they interacted with each other, interacted with our design team, we could see that they were going to be a partner through thick and thin. So at the end of the interviews, they had a slightly higher score, and we went into the last round of the cost proposal. This is where they provide the cost for their people, for the duration of the project, and their fee for the project. Their people cost was a little bit higher, and their fee was a little bit lower, and the net was a little bit higher cost proposal, but it didn't offset the score from the interviews. As a result, they received the most qualified proposer. So as Dan mentioned, there's a lot of benefits to using GCCM delivery, and it's being able to work collaboratively as a team and solving problems to create value for the project. And we believe Absher is the partner that will help us realize those benefits and ultimately deliver on our commitment of providing the greatest financial value, highest level of customer service, and highest level of safety for our customer owners and employees. So what happens next? What we're here to do today is to ask for authorization to award the RFP contract and enter into a pre-construction agreement with Absher Construction. So this would allow them to come on to the project team now and work through schematic design and the rest of design process with us. And that would be for a not-to-exceed amount of $500,000. At the completion of design, oh, I should say, during that process, what they do is they provide input on the cost, the schedule, constructability, material selection, value engineering ideas, quality control, safety enhancements, and bid packaging strategy. So there's a lot of feedback that they can provide through that design process to really get the project dialed in the greatest value. When we complete the design, then we will negotiate a guaranteed maximum price with Absher and return to the board for authorization to issue a change order for the total project construction. Now, we're already discussing the possibility of maybe phasing that and doing a mini guaranteed maximum price for site development. This is similar to how we're phasing the Rock Island and Rocky Beach projects, and that would be signing a contract to do the earthwork so that we could get a little bit earlier start, take advantage of next summer summer months, and then entering the full agreement in the fall. So we'll come back to the board with a more refined recommendation on that, but I wanted to let you know where that's possibly heading. So, any questions?
Yes, Commissioner Congdon.
So, I asked a few of these questions already with Eric this morning. But I'm going to ask him in open session because I know there are people who are paying attention to this. And I am paying attention, Dan. I've been trying to understand this since you first proposed it. It's complicated, and it's a real shift. So I'm going to ask this question, and maybe I understand it, maybe I don't. Legally, in terms of bid law, how are we meeting the competitive bid requirement?
So I'll take that one, Commissioner, or Qualquist General Counsel. So this is actually one of several alternatively provided procurement and delivery mechanisms. So it is an exception to the usual Title 39 design bid build process for procurement for qualifying projects like this. This is a project that does qualify under, there's the design bid, there's the GCCM, and there's actually another one that I forget the name of at the moment. Doesn't matter, we're not using it. It is an authorized delivery mechanism for PUDs. Actually, it's been used by Grant PUD Chelan now once under our projects out Rocky Reach and Rock Island and also by Seattle. You'll recall, Commissioner, that actually one of the preconditions to proceeding with this type of procurement and delivery mechanism is that we have to go before the state committee and present our case for why they should authorize us to use this delivery mechanism for this project. And there are a number of factors that one of which at least must be met in order to get that pre-authorization. So in terms of are we satisfying our obligations utilizing one of the approved delivery mechanisms, we are.
So did this originate with the, did the legislature pass a law that enables large construction firms to approach the process this way?
Well, it's driven by the agency, and it was authorized in 1994, and it initially only was able to be accessed by large cities, large counties, large ports, and the University of Washington and WSU. There was only a handful of agencies that could access it because they were the ones that did these really complex projects. Over the last 24 years, The process has been updated by the legislature, and when they enacted the law, they put in place a feedback loop. So there's the what's called CPAR, the Capital Project Review Board, that every project that goes through this process has to answer questions and give feedback. And over the 24 years, they keep updating the law and saying, you know, it really makes sense for these type of projects too, or these type. And so it really is, it's up to the agency to decide, do I want to follow this way, and is there a benefit to us? For us, it's a benefit to our customer owners, and that's what we've been going through that process. I've done several design build projects through other authorizations under different parts of the statute, and so this is just another opportunity for us to do things a little differently and try to drive value into our project. And so this is up for reauthorization actually next year in the legislature because it does have a sunset each time. Mm. And so this committee continually gets feedback from the process and provides it back in the form of changes to the legislation.
So Commissioner, I want to answer your specific question. Yes, it's pursuant to a specific set of state statutes under Title 3910. That's a section of the Public Procurement Code that's entitled Alternative Public Works Procedures.
So this is a large firm. You said it has 300 employees. So these are large firms that are undertaking this kind of a approach, right?
Yes.
So did they, I'm just curious how that came about. Did they promote this with the state and...
From what my understanding of it, and I went through a GCCM class several months ago, and it really was a joint between UW was one of the first ones that really saw the value. And so there was a how do we open bids and not be disappointed by the results time and time and time again? Mm. And so it was a joint effort of large contractors that said, hey, you know, we bid your projects, but we don't know the risks, and we weren't involved in helping you put it together. So we have to monetize those risks on bid day. If you let us in the door earlier and help you put the bids together and do the design, we can give you a better price because now we know more. And when we're opening bids, it's always a risk proposition. Who's taking the risk? And we've talked about this with our unit price contracts, how we use those to mitigate risk. And so by defining the risk and helping establish where that risk contingency lies in the budget, contractors can come in with a really competitive pricing because they know they're not taking on additional risk because it's been worked out through the design process.
So when you look at their qualifications, are you looking at all of those things?
Absolutely. We have I think there was 10 sections they had to address in their initial qualification, their submittal of qualifications, and it's success on projects of similar type. It's how have they done on their risk budget on past projects? So that's mm-hmm. a really good indicator. Are they good at managing the risk? Because you put aside a risk budget and you don't have to use it if you manage that risk well. And so all those things, safety is part of that, overall project budget, timing, all those things were considered. And a lot of it, as David said, focused on the people that are doing the job. And rarely in this world do we get to pick the people that are going to build our projects in the public side. And this process is really in there to pick the best qualified group of people to build that project.
So they certainly want to make a profit. They have a profit motive. Mm-hmm. So how do they engage our staff? How much is our staff involved every step of the way? I mean, do we have staff that are going through every single step with them and monitoring cost and getting, you know, I love the you mentioned it. Now I can't think of the name of it, where unit cost pricing mm-hmm. Seemed to always work really well. So is there an analogous system or with a large firm like this?
Are you referring to the bidding itself? Because all the work is still bid out under this scenario. We've selected the general contractor, but all of the work that's to be done has to go through a bidding process, and we are part of that bidding process.
Okay.
They can only perform 30% of the work, so part of the statute limits how much the general contractor can perform. They're our construction manager on the project. And so when David referred to the cost of their people, that's the project manager and the superintendent and their safety officer. But then all of the work that's done on the project is actually subbed out, and they can compete for those sub packages.
Well, that makes me feel better because I was kind of thinking of the fox watching the hen house.
Right, absolutely.
But okay, so I missed that piece, that they can only perform 30% of the work.
That's correct.
Commissioner McKenna.
In my prior life, a group of superintendents went to the legislature when this was in the works, or I can't remember, it was the first time, or I think it was the first time that this reauthorization of this, I don't recall. But our concern was, how do we were looking for a different method to go into a climate working in partnership with a selected reputable contractor who worked with us, had a team approach, that you didn't feel like you were competing with all the time with constant change orders where they would low estimate at one side and then come in and then all these change orders and kill you cost-wise on the other end. So they would successfully compete with a low bid, but by the time you were done, you're ready to kill each other. Well, and so, you know, I think that this was an attempt to try something and do something different and more collaborative in nature for the betterment of everybody, the contractor and the owner, and in the long run, the public that owns the facility.
I think your comment really gets to, it's a relationship type between the contractor and the agency. And I actually wrote this down before, and I didn't highlight it, but you have a collaborative versus an adversarial relationship. And part of that is to do with the open book. It's an open book process, so all their bids are open. When you're dealing with a contractor that gave you a low lump sum bid, you're not sure where he put his profit. You're not sure where all it is. So when you go to make a change order or they try to make a change order, you don't know, that may be hitting them in the bottom, you know, the bottom line really hard. But with an open book process, if something changes, you all know that they have a markup on the work that's subbed out, just like a lot of other like unit price contracts or other things. And so it's very open book, and so there's no one's hiding what they're doing, you know, behind their closed books. And the collaborative process, it really helps. As 20 years of managing public projects, I wish I had this tool in my bag earlier, honestly, because frequently you're negotiating with somebody who, there is an adversary relationship because they put a bid down and they took all the risk. And in this convention we're working under in a GCCM, it's collaborative. We all want to get to a successful project.
So you said that the legislature or somebody's going to take a look at this in a year and reauthorize or potentially reauthorize it?
There's actually two paths that they're talking about. One is reauthorization. The other one is to just incorporate this right into the law and no longer call it an alternative method of procurement. Just to say, for projects that meet these requirements, we're just going to say it's available because of 24 years of successful implementation.
So it sounds fabulous. I mean, I love the collaborative part of it. It sounds terrific, but it always does. So hopefully we'll just really follow up and have an opportunity to share our, you know, our successes, our failures with this, with the powers that be.
Our intent as we go through this process is to provide updates, you know, as we're moving through. Obviously, there's check-ins because we need authorization to do something. But I think a project of this magnitude is going to require a more frequent check-in to let you know how it's going.
Good.
We fully intend to do that.
Yeah, good. Thank you.
While we're here, we would love to give you an update on the project as well.
Please do.
Can we do that now?
Yeah, please do.
So last time we were here, we approved the decision to move forward on the project. So we started schematic design. So this is the part of the design process where we take all of the program pieces that we've developed and try to fit them all together. We've been working with staff to figure out how to lay out the interiors of all the different spaces and promote workflow efficiency. We're also developing strategies for the different systems in the facilities to be able to meet our conservation targets. And then we're starting to look at the construction schedule and phasing. So that was why I mentioned the potential of doing an early package to be able to get the site development going next summer. So we're also starting discussions with the city on permitting and working through all those different avenues. And we're developing a process to engage the community in the lobby design. So we have the goal of representing all of the communities in Chelan County in the lobby through some common theme, possibly through water. And we hope to develop that further and then bring the different communities into that so we can really represent our customer owners in the lobby. So also, we're working on the 5th Street redevelopment plan. We conducted a community workshop on June 21st. And we had 30 community representatives there talking about all the different ideas we could come up with. First, we talked about a shared set of community values, what's important to this community, and there was a lot of alignment right off the bat with the people that were there. Then we talked about different ideas for redevelopment and different mechanisms that would spur that development. Some of the concepts included a community center, a place for the public to gather. We've already heard interest from the YMCA and the public library. We also talked about an arts district that would complement what music theater is doing. And then a maker innovation space. And then, of course, we all know there's a need for residential. A lot of great ideas. And we also discussed how the lineage properties could be part of a larger discussion, because that definitely plays a role in the amount of space that's available for development. So there was a lot of excitement about the different possibilities. So our consultant, Collins Werman, will take all those different ideas and concepts and analyze them based on market feasibility, and they're going to come back with different recommendations. We're going to reconvene with that advisory group, and then we want to take this to the broader community through a public open house, social media, and a web page to get more community feedback. And then in the end, our plan is to bring final recommendations to this board and also the port and city and make decisions on what we do next. So it's really exciting to see what could be here.
I find that particularly exciting. I think that the community has made it pretty clear that they're concerned and they have watchful eyes on how this piece of property redevelops. That's pretty exciting news. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next up is agenda item 11. It's a resolution ratifying field, a resolution authorizing the general manager to execute field work order change order contract 1660 with Andrus Hydro for Newgate operating rings. Brett Pickford will be presenting for us.
Good Good morning, Brett Bickford, Director of Engineering and Project Management. Today I'd like to present staff's evaluation of procurement of a new gate operating and related equipment for units B1 to B4. Kind of review our strategy for parts that are found not to meet a 50-year fatigue life after they've been disassembled. Unit B4 is the first of a four-unit program at Powerhouse 1. And so what we find here, we try to use to make better decisions going forward with that. And then also to propose consideration of this resolution to buy new gate operating equipment. So where are gate operating rings? This is a cross-section of Powerhouse 1. And here in the light green color where the arrow's pointed is where the gate operating rings are located. These rings are used. They've got hydraulic servos that are attached to them. And the gate rotates. And it's connected with, we call it gate arms and levers, to the wicket gates. The wicket gates are used to control the flow of water into and out of the unit. So pretty important piece of equipment. District staff for about a month has been evaluating the risks, the costs, the impacts to operations, impacts to existing contracts, to reuse, to do some further evaluation of these gate rings, or to replace. And one of the complications we have is that we are planning to replace the gate rings, the gate arms and levers for these gate rings on all the units. And so if we reuse the old gate rings, it's a different set of levers than if we were to procure new gate rings. Here's an example of one of the cracks that we found. And so Andritz removed this gate operating ring, had it sandblasted. They did visual and dye penetrant inspection, found actually about 105 indications, we call them. The district took possession of the gate ring. We had our central maintenance crews inspect it with wet fluorescent mag particle. Actually found 30 or 40 more indications. Our crews excavated a number of these to find out the length and width to see how significant some of these were. Up on the top of the gate ring in some low stress areas, we actually took what we call boat samples, and we sent them off to a metallurgy lab to have those exampled, to have those examined. And what we found is that through some of those, again, some more indications here, we found that from the two excavations that we did find is that those were probably casting flaws from the original casting that was done back in the early 1930s. And so going forward with what do we do with this information, we've got reuse considerations, and in that it includes we probably have some life left in those rings, but we have significant risks we think going forward, particularly because when we do commissioning of these units, we subject them to some of the higher loads and stresses that they're going to see. These units are going to have new governor control systems, and as we test those systems to make sure that everything works, these will be going through a number of load rejections and emergency stops, and so that puts some of the highest loads on those. And so we've got concern that that will maybe eliminate whatever life is left with them, or maybe even cause some failures. So we have some risks there. So what we looked at is what would be the future outage costs if we need to replace these, both near and short term. We think that might cost about $200,000 each to replace those. I mentioned the new gate arms that we're purchasing would be designed for this old gate ring. If we want to buy new ones, we think we could save about $100,000 because we can design it with a different style of gate ring that's less expensive and easier to maintain. If we continue to use these gate rings, we think we would have to monitor them maybe even weekly, and then there would be other maintenance considerations as well. So we looked at what could we do for further testing of these gate rings. So we could take out some more boat samples in some of the higher stress areas to see whether those cracks have grown over its life or not, but for the particular gate ring being B4, that would render that gate ring useless. Our crews are saying that if we excavated in those high-stressed areas like where I showed, that they were pretty confident they couldn't do repairs to that area. And so that would eliminate the option of reusing that gate ring to help meet schedule. So looking at the replacement alternatives, new gate rings and new gate arms of the lesser expensive cost would be about $1.6 million if we use the strategy that we should buy all four now. The reason to do that would be that then we can eliminate schedule impacts on the other units. These take about 4 to 5 months to procure. And on this first unit, what would happen is that procurement time would impact the schedule. That would be additional cost to us. So we would be proposing to reuse the old gate arm and at a future time come back and replace that gate ring. And we would reuse those old arms and have the other new gate arms that we could also install. We're pretty confident that the contractor could develop a new gate ring design that would last the 50 years. It's not a very difficult fabrication to make, and high confidence that it could last that full design life. So if we look kind of at the bottom line from the most conservative view, cost of gate arms is about $1.6 million and gate rings, that combination of equipment. If we just look at the lesser expensive of the gate arms for this option, then we can get down to a net of about $1.2 million. There's further benefits, again, if we can keep our project on schedule. There's significant value there, and then we also avoid future procurements and future outages of about $200,000 each. So staff has prepared the resolution that would authorize the general manager for about $1.6 million to buy up to four units worth of gate rings and gate arms and levers. Also, staff would be working to execute that field work order and potentially more than one to help make sure that we don't delay the contractor, as there's a significant impact of up to about $1 million if we have to change a schedule such that we wait for a new gate ring for the first unit. But we also want to look for alternatives to make sure that we're getting a fair price, we're getting a fair schedule, and that we can't get a new gate arm, a gate ring and arm for the first unit so that we can just put it in once the first time and not have to come back in the future. Any questions?
Commissioners, no questions? All right. Well, commissioners, we have been presented with a regular agenda. Do I hear a motion?
That would be for 9 and 10.
9 and 10.
Steve, were you?
I was just looking for the... So I would move to approve Resolution 9, accepting the proposal of Absure Construction Company, and Resolution Number 11.
Number 10.
10, resolution authorizing the general manager to execute field order, work order change for Contract 1660 with Andritz Hydro for new gate ring new gate operating rings.
Is there a second?
Second.
Been moved and seconded. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed? The ayes have it.
Okay, we have a few manager items. We're going to jump to those. I want to give you an update on the insurance renewal that we've talked about the last two board meetings. Ron Gibbs will do that.
Ron Gibbs, Insurance and Claims Manager. I'm trying to keep this quick. I know you've heard a lot about insurance lately. So the motion you approved allowed for the purchase of the renewal policies for $2,435,000. And then we also have the option of purchasing an additional $25 million in liability insurance for $115,000. So
I'm just here to update you with the results of our work there. And after receiving a quote for $108,000, we chose to purchase the additional liability insurance coverage for the reasons that we discussed previously, which include mitigating the district's wildfire risks and also providing flexibility as the insurance market fluctuates. The good news is that since the June 17th board meeting, we've continued negotiations, and we were able to get premiums quoted at $40,000 less than the quotes that we had at that time, so that helps offset things a little bit. But all in all, it was a challenging year this year to get insurance in place, especially on the liability side. But I feel good that we have a well-protected program at this point. The district is well-protected. So are there any questions?
That's great. Good news. Came in under budget. Like it.
Yeah. good job, Ron.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you.
Next up, I want to give you an update. You recall the Discovery Center. We have a big refurbishment project planned for that, and it will need to be closed for about 18 months in order to accomplish that. Debbie Gallagher and Neil Naratsas will be explaining our outreach plan.
Good afternoon. Neil Naratso, Communications Manager.
Debbie Gallagher, Discovery Center Manager.
Welcome.
And we're going to kick this off with a video to kind of give you be oriented about the project here. Oops. Let me try that again. There it is.
That's really good, too.
So am I doing this right? There's sound right here. Huh.
Well, and it was right so good.
Right. We will email it to you.
Okay.
Yeah.
And talking to Debbie, I was reminding her that early in my career, I worked for a couple of museums in Chicago and here in the Seattle area. And it's just a really exciting project for me to be part of for that reason, just to see the 55-year history of this facility and to hear the stories that people have. And I think we've had some of our employees come in and talk about artifacts they liked that they were hoping were going to move and all kinds of different great stories. So one of the things that we're going to be doing is really, as a theme, is really celebrating the past and celebrating the past and embracing our future. So as we go through the 18 months or so from closure to bringing the center up and running, we'll be, you know, looking at these great stories that over the last 55 years that people throughout the community have shared. As we move to opening the center, it'll really be experiencing the Columbia. And the consultant we work with was really excited to share that story with us. So.
So I'm going to share just a few of the messages that are part of the communication plan as we reach out to our stakeholders, our guests, people in the area. So one, the first one that's coming right up is that fish viewing will close October 1st of this year. So our plan is to make sure everybody, they visit soon before the popular attraction closes. And we'll have a greatly improved fish viewing area to share with customers at our new facility in 2021. So we've been doing this. We have been so busy out at Reach lately. We've got so many fish coming through that people, the few people that we have shared this part of this little bit of message, they can't wait. They're very excited. Another message that we'll be sharing is during the construction, we will still be scheduling powerhouse tours. And many of our popular education programs and events will still be available for students, families, and visitors. And I know some of you have asked the same thing. Well, if you're going to close in 2020, what are you going to do? We're still going to do everything. We're just going to do it differently. So many of our activities will be held at the Rocky Reach Park, which will remain open during construction. The other thing that Bob and I, we do have our 2020 season already planned out. It's all on our whiteboard. We're ready to go. We're excited about it. So one of our big events that we're going to do in 2020, we're going to do 15 parks in 15 days. So we don't have the Discovery Center. We don't have use of the auditorium. It doesn't stop us. So we have 15 parks, and we're going to use the 15 parks, and we've already got them reserved. So we have our plan is made, and the parks are reserved, and we'll be ready to go. One of the strategies that we're going to do is we're going to reach out to our customers, the chambers, and actually I've done that so far, our tourism agencies and other regional groups to share news of the Discovery Center closing and the plans for the new facility in 2021. We're going to promote three distinct events for, number one, our employees, number two, our VIPs, our key stakeholders, three, the general public. And we're going to use varied communication tactics to share the news of the phases of closing, construction, and the new facility opening. The closing will draw on historical material for a retro theme when appropriate, and the opening will be planned closer to the 2021 timeframe. So one of the ideas that we're going to do, my biggest concern is making sure everybody knows that this is the last year that they can visit the Museum of the Columbia. I don't want that message to be missed. So we're getting ready with that. This video is really great. It's one of the few from North 40. This is one that, and Neil will talk about that a little bit more. But that'll be one of the ways that we'll be reaching people. The other one is on November 1st. We close on October 31st to the public, but on November 1st, we're going to have a special day, a special evening for those three groups. And it's going to be a night at the museum saying goodbye. So we're excited about it. We are getting ready for it. And I've started the outreach to all of these groups that I mentioned earlier.
And we'll be reaching out in a number of ways. I think Debbie mentioned that reaching out to tourism and chambers is obviously a really important one. We want to make sure the Seattle visitors and other people are well aware of our closure plans and the transition to the new center. The videos, we'll email this one to you, but the second one will be more of a we're closing video. Make sure you get out and see us this summer. Beyond that, we'll be doing some digital ads. We'll be doing some radio interviews throughout the summer and throughout the transition period. So, you know, we'll really make sure we're reaching out to our customers and our outside the area in multiple ways. Website updates, obviously. And really, again, as Debbie mentioned, it's really a journey we want to take people on because there is a lot of history here, a lot of excitement. One of the other things we've talked about doing as part of the event itself is you may have seen some of the virtual reality headsets, and I think we've used those with the service center, for example, seeing how things might look. We're really hoping that the consultant we're working with can provide those so when customers come in for the closing event or other events, they can actually kind of see what the entrance looks like, see what the lobby looks like, and so really see it in kind of a virtual way. So in terms of programming around the event, there's a lot of other things we can do. I know we've had celebrations of our history in the past where we brought in the Columbia Chorale and other groups. We think we can have a lot of fun with this on the closing event. Any other comments you wanted to make, Debbie?
No, I think that's it, unless you have questions.
Commissioner Congdon?
I'm so excited about this. I love the night at the museum. Is that how you're billing it, night at the museum?
Yes, yeah. Night at the museum saying goodbye.
Yeah, that's awesome. Great. Great activities. Can we join? Can we be at the VIP event? I mean, can we come to the VIP event?
Oh yeah, everybody.
We qualify.
Yeah, you more than qualify.
Because there's live music and it looks like it's great. It looks like fun. Yeah,
you'll be great.
Yeah, great job. Sounds awesome. I get comments all the time. So what are they going to do with all those great old artifacts? Are they going to throw them away? What are they going to get rid of them? So that would be great. Information to get out there, and the virtual headsets, are those, is that already, are we far enough along in our design to be able to, have they produced that already?
No. So Casey and I do have a Skype meeting with Pacific Studio on Monday, and there's a lot of things that we're going to be talking about. One idea we're talking about, I visited with Steve about on Friday, and it's augmented reality. It'll be it's a really cool idea. I was at the Quincy Museum last week with our high school students from the STEM Academy, and they have it at the Quincy Museum, and I highly recommend, if you're out in that area, please stop in. That's an amazing showstopper. It's a little tiny museum, but they really did it right, and they are using augmented reality in that. So, you know, as this is developed, I don't know a lot about it, but I know enough that it got me really excited. And I talked with Pacific Studios about it this morning, and so we're going to be talking about it next Monday.
So we may be able to do that.
Yes.
So once you get that put together and you have those available, can you bring them in here so
absolutely.
we can all look at them?
Absolutely.
Okay. And one last question: How are we doing on the budget?
I think we're
good.
Yeah, we're good.
We're going to be able to complete kind of where we were headed.
Yes.
Cool. Awesome.
Yep. Any other questions?
I just want to share an experience with you, and it just happened on Saturday, which is why I bring this up. Chatting with ran into a young woman who was in town visiting her mother. This woman lives in Eugene. And we just got to chatting about the museum at Rocky Reach. And I mentioned to her that we were going to be doing some modernization and that it eventually would be closing. She was saddened by the fact it was closing. She was excited by the fact that we were going to modernize. And then she shared with me that last year, she brought a friend of hers out from Chicago for the sole purpose of visiting our museum and visiting our area and visiting Rocky Reach. And so it makes a big difference that this is a person who lives in Eugene, Oregon, bringing a person out from Chicago to come to Wenatchee to visit Rocky Reach Museum. So it didn't fail to impress me that this is getting nationwide coverage. So I think all the media outreach that you're doing is wonderful, and the fact that you're going to cast your net throughout the region, I think, is very appropriate, given the fact that there are people from Oregon coming to our museum at Rocky Reach. So,
we have people come there from all over the world, and in the last couple of weeks, I've really noticed we've had several guests here from Israel. We've had a lot from the United Kingdom. Today, right before I left, there was a large group that came in from Puerto Rico. And they were staying here in the United States with their family from Michigan. So the group from Michigan brought the group from Puerto Rico to Washington and to the Wenatchee Valley, and they said this was one of their main stops that they wanted to see was Rocky Reach Dam. So we get a lot of that. It's great.
It's fabulous.
Yeah, it is.
That's right.
And I can't wait until we open because it will be a larger audience.
Well, good job.
Sure.
Good job. Yeah. Thank you.
You used an interesting phrase. Mr. Smith noted it as well, but augmented reality. Mm-hmm. And I can assure you, as an assistant principal, I worked with students who have experienced a little bit of augmented reality. So, yeah, it just kind of brought back a flash.
And you know, we actually had a high school student presenting that to us in at the Quincy Museum last week. So
it's a great phrase. I should have been able to use that on the referrals. Your son or daughter was experiencing augmented reality.
All right. Next up, Neil is going to stay. We're going to invite Tracy Hunt up and give you an update on strategic planning and the survey results.
Good afternoon. Tracy Hunt, Director of External Affairs, and you already heard from Neil. So three parts to today, a little bit of a survey process. We'll give you some status, and then Neil's got a peek in the bag. So we've seen about 2,700 responses. In 2015, we saw about 4,400, which sounds like maybe a little drop-off. However, really high quality. And what do we mean by high quality? Four times the written responses. We've got about 3,700 written responses compared to about 1,000 in 2015. 54% of the responses have been online, meaning the 46% was in writing. We received back in the mail. This is about double the response rate from another Washington State utility over on the west side. So good involvement, really good quality input. I like to see a positive trend. Last time we saw less than 1% response from our Hispanic Latino community. A lot of room for improvement there. We've moved up to about 5.4%. Like to see that continue to go more and more. But that is a great step forward nonetheless. Surveys closed on June 21st, and we're in the process of drafting the report, and we'll be back around August with some more details, but until then, Neil's going to satisfy a little curiosity with some numbers right up front.
Okay. We saw some early trends, kind of getting at four or five of these, but one is that we did see some strong supports for the Rock Island early actions in support of a 50-year license, with about 82% of our customers in support of that. In terms of projects funded under the Public Power Benefit Program, and including Rock Island, customers ranked, in terms of criteria, economic development, recreation, and environmental stewardship as the top criteria of the group of, I think, about six to eight criteria that we identified. Also, we saw that the majority of customer owners, about 61.4%, almost two-thirds, would desire a greater emphasis on local electric load to support economic development versus wholesale. If in fact those came with only a modest impact on rates. Another point that we saw highlighted in some of the early survey results were that customer owners are interested in utilities, water, wastewater, and fiber business lines becoming more self-sustainable or more of a balanced approach. So we saw about 84% on the fiber side and 87% on the water and wastewater side of those becoming more self-sustainable. And then also, finally, when needed, customer owners largely support smaller but stable annual rate increases rather than deferring the rate increase and risking a larger rate increase later. So that was, again, about 76%. And then a few of us have started to dive in a little deeper with a lot of the comments. Tracy mentioned that there was about four times the amount of last survey, about 3,700, is that right? Yep. And so one of the things you'll see here is we did a word cloud, and it's kind of a nice way of looking at the themes that came up in a lot of the questions. This one was more of the quality of life issues that we looked at. And so you can see that power rates remaining low, certainly fiber was on that list. Parks was on a number of the survey questions that came up as a common comment. And then things like access to rivers and local access, maintaining rates at low levels. Considerable emphasis also that we saw was on things we were doing right. So we, as you went through the comments, you saw a lot of comments about we're stay on the same track, we like what you're doing, we really appreciate the fact you're reaching out to us. So a lot of pats on the back in terms of things that we're doing well already. Again, lots of interest in fiber, low and stable rates, again, are very important. And again, those kinds of things came out in the word cloud. So we'll be continuing to go through these. Justin will be back in August to give you another report, and we can kind of dive in a little bit deeper. But if you have any other questions, we can certainly answer those and base those on what we've seen so far.
Commissioners, questions? Thank you.
I like it.
Yeah.
That'd be nice here in the boardroom.
Great.
I like a word cloud.
Okay. Great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen.
That's it for manager items, so it's over to commissioner items.
Commissioners, any items?
Oh, I'm sorry. We had an addition. We had a late addition that I forgot about.
Okay. Back to you, Steve.
take back my time. So Dan Frazier has an update with respect to property acquisition, potential property acquisition.
My fault. That's why we're late. Hopefully, I can get the very quickly. So, I'm here to talk to you about the potential acquisition of the Tontini property. That's the subject parcel at the bottom of the map there, home of the former Haran House. So, we've been working with the owners, which is actually the Nevio and Elizabeth Tontini Revocable Trust, are the owners of the property. We've reached an agreement on terms, and it's all contingent, of course, on board approval with all property acquisition. We have met with the city of Wenatchee about what can be done in that area. As you recall, it's part of the Wenatchee shoreline, and so it's covered under the Shoreline Master Program. And we can do the things that we had talked about early in the process as we were getting closer to completing the business case on the service center location. A lot of interest in a trail and waterfront access came up. And that, in this zone, which is a community urban waterfront zone, highly encouraged to do access, both visual and physical access. And so those would be uses that could be brought on into this site. So really very, very consistent with what we were hoping to be able to do. The terms of the agreement, it's slightly less per square foot than we paid for other parcels. It came into generally what we were expecting. It was a a good negotiation in terms of, I think it's equitable for both parties. We would ask, we'd be back on the 15th to ask for approval of the purchase and sale agreement, and we'd be closing sometime early in August with a successful approval by the board. Any questions?
Yes, Commissioner Smith.
Two quick questions. Looking at the picture you've got on the map, approximately what size is the parcel, and is the I see a cutout, the house cutout.
So the parcel is 2.21 acres, and that cutout is another private parcel that we're working with to acquire, working with the owner currently to acquire. As you recall, we didn't highlight on this map, but we also own, and unfortunately this map is the county assessor map, which is incorrect. The parcel lines are incorrect, and so we're working with them to correct that. Those of you that worked in the public sector and rely on assessor maps, they frequently are incorrect because of the title has changed over the years. If you look down where it shows the two little PUD buildings here that are on someone else's property, well, they're not. one of them is. The building close to the highway is actually on the highway right away, but our property extends down to the river here and across. And so PUD owns this triangular piece here and then all the way down to the river and actually owns the riverfront itself down here. So,
Have we owned that for a while?
We've owned that, yeah. Well, part of the project boundary is the lower part. And then we acquired this triangle from the port for a potential substation site at least 10 years ago. So we would have all the ownership down here eventually is the plan.
That's awesome. Great news. Good work.
So Dan, the piece of property between the railroad tracks and the potential Haran property, down lower by the red line, that piece of property there.
So this is actually owned by the city of Wenatchee now. It was recently transferred from the port of Chelan County, actually then into Chelan County and now into the city of Wenatchee's hands. It's actually a regional stormwater facility. So the stormwater from Chatham Hill and all over this area comes down right where these trees are, where the wet spot in the area would be, is where the water comes in. And this is a regional treatment facility. It comes across, and then they have a discharge permit across our property to discharge the Wenatchee River.
So that's storm sewer then?
It's stormwater, yeah. Stormwater treatment.
So if we were to connect a trail to park, it's possible that that...
Yes, we would look at crossing over that. So in our meeting with the city talking about the future potential trail, they were very interested in the idea of connecting it to the loop trail, which we of course are too. And it was really good to hear that we have to cross their property, and it sounds like they're interested in it. So I think we have a willing partner to get us across their property and into the trail system.
Good.
Great. Thank you. Good. Any other questions? Commissioners?
We'd be planning to bring this back as a resolution at the next board meeting.
Yeah. All right. Good. Right. Looking forward to it.
Thank you. Thanks,
Dan.
Thank you.
Okay, now I think we are ready
for okay.
Mr. Item.
Commissioners, any items, anything to discuss today? Yes, Commissioner
Just,
Smith.
To let all know, on Friday I go to Richland for that first segment of the Legislative Energy Horizon Institute. Became aware, and I think now that Kirk and Tracy are aware, that specific seminar is coordinated by one of our state legislators, Jeff Morris. And so it'll be 4 days here, 4 days in Washington, D.C., so we'll have an opportunity to get to know our Representative Morris a lot better, and hopefully, as Kirk and I were talking earlier today, make him acutely aware of our Hydro Research Institute and how that might potentially play in this educational effort going forward. So we'll see.
That's great. Good news.
I just have one thing to share. I've had the extreme opportunity to attend some safety meetings recently, and I would just like to commend Tim and staff on the work they're doing, quite engaging with staff and good reinforcement from prior learning at every meeting so that they're just hearing the message over and over, and I was very pleased, so it was fun to go.
That's good. Good.
Look forward to attending some more.
Okay. Commission travel?
Yep.
Lisa?
Hello.
Hi, Lisa.
I wanted to let you know I'm at Karen's desk from now on.
Oh, welcome.
Thank you.
Is that just this week or is it permanent?
Well, this week is Karen is practicing retirement, so I'm filling in, and next Monday is my official start date.
Okay.
But I will be there this week as well.
I said something on your desk.
I noticed, so I thought.
Thank you for that.
I thought I should mention that so you all know where I am. So you walked further than you needed to. So for travel, I don't think much has changed since our last meeting. We have Waputa and Leavenworth this month. Commissioner Smith for APPA policymakers at the end of the month. Commissioner Arsenault, we still checking on Oregon UDA.
Yes, and I'll get back to you on that.
Okay. Yeah. I thought it was funny. I keep calling it OPUDA, but ours is Waputa. Ours works better than
Waputa.
Waputa. Yeah, I don't like it.
Oh, it sounds like a byword. Waputa.
So ours is better. I just wanted to enter that. Then we have Waputa in Suquamish in September. I have everyone so far attending except Commissioner Congdon. Anyone want to change anything? Nope. Then Commissioner Congdon traveling to Montana in September. Mm-hmm. Are we still doing that?
Mm-hmm. I'll get to you on flight dates.
Yeah, don't book it yourself.
No. Mm-mm. Please. Yeah, I know.
Okay.
Made a note of it.
Okay.
But you've got the hotel scheduled or booked.
I don't have it. I don't think I've seen anything about it.
I'll see if I can find it for you.
Okay.
And dates. I'll get that to you.
So I'll send you an email just for a
reminder.
Action item.
Yeah. Thanks.
We have water workshop in September in Leavenworth. Everyone attending?
I am not.
No?
I'll be just attending probably the first day to welcome people to Chelan County, but I will not be attending the overall seminar. I got a wedding coming up there.
Okay.
I'm okay, but I won't be spending the night. I'll just be going back and forth.
Yeah.
I think.
You don't need a hotel?
No.
Okay.
And I will not be attending that one.
Okay. Thank you. Commissioner McKenna?
I will be doing what Randy's doing, just welcome people the first day.
Well. Okay. All right. Then we have the Waputa Budget Committee meeting in October for Commissioner Smith.
And depending on who I ultimately end up appointing to the budget committee, since I found out I've got this absolute power as president of the association, I may ask one of my fellow commissioners to be on that committee, but don't know yet, so I've got to look around. They might think it's an abuse of power in Olympia, so got to be careful.
Okay. And then you'll be in D.C. in October 23-26.
Yep.
Okay. Waputa and Olympia, November 13 to 15. Annual conference, December 4 to 6 at the Heathman Lodge in Vancouver. Am I missing anything?
There's a, and I just sent this over the weekend, and you probably haven't had a chance to see it yet. APPA has a conference on cybersecurity,
Okay.
That will be in Nashville, Tennessee in November. And I would like to be registered to go to that.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Anyone else? Is that it?
That's it.
No one's making eye contact. I think that's it.
I think so. Thank you, Lisa. Appreciate that.
Thanks, Lisa.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Follow up of, on delegation of action items. We had two from the last meeting. Rebecca would get you the BBC video featuring Link Transit. That was emailed same day. You've seen that. And the second one was Justin was going to get back to you on the number of electronic versus digital responses, and you heard that in the report that we just had. It was 54% electronic. That's it.
Okay.
You have two items from this meeting. The one is to get the decision evaluation criteria to the board, and the other one is to email the video with sound for the
The first one's actually done. You should have it in your inbox.
Oh, great.
Perfect.
So we're just going to call that one done.
All right. Good. So there's no public for public comment. Any matters of general business? Hearing none. We will need an executive session for approximately how long?
I think that's your call.
Commissioners, what do you think?
15 minutes.
15 minutes. Okay. So you want to say, look at the clock right now, you want to say 2:45?
Yeah.
Give us a little room to take a few-minute break here?
Correct.
Okay. So we will be having an executive session to discuss with legal counsel any agency enforcement actions, litigation. We're back on the employee.
Yeah.
Yeah, let me go back.
Right, to discuss the performance of a public employee.
So we're in executive session to review the performance of a public employee as authorized by our CW. So we will need about 15 minutes in executive session. We're going to take about a four-minute break. We will start at 2:30 and end at 2:45. We are coming out of executive session. It's July 1st, 2019. No decisions were made. No votes were taken. Is there any additional business to come before the commission? Hearing none, we will stand adjourned.